financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
We resolved many things, but what we didn't resolve was that the wife had the George Foreman grill that husband's grandma had given the couple for their wedding.
Oh my gosh.
And they couldn't resolve it.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the Money Doctor, Francis Raham. We have a guest today.
We have an attorney guest today, yeah. Christopher Anderson. I won't call you Attorney Anderson. We're going to talk about that for a minute. But he is an attorney, of course, and a family law attorney. So we're talking about something that could bring even the calmest people to their knees, probably. Divorce and money. And if that doesn't sound like it's going to be fun, hang in there, because I promise you, our pre-show chat that we did was so engaging that we asked him to come on for a special edition. So we're going to talk about how the financial side can be made fairer, more human, and less painful. So our guest, Christopher Anderson, will help us do that. He's a family law attorney and a former prosecutor who's not afraid to talk about the realities behind the numbers. So welcome to the show.
And the numbers behind the realities, you bet. I'm really pleased to be here. Thanks for having me. And you're right. Like it's a combination. Divorce brings it all together, right? You get to talk about money. You get to talk about family. You get to talk about religion. You get to talk about all the things that are the most difficult. But it is really important to have frank discussions about.
For sure. And the emotional side of it will run most of our conversation, I'm sure, because sure. That's what people deal with. But as the financial nerd that I am, we're also going to talk about forms, formulas, that so-called math for law. We'll talk about a little bit about math for law and how it might oversimplify real life numbers, right? And the difference between, you know, what equal and equitable mean and all the things that you would need to know, or you would want someone you cared for who was going through what I call the unmarrying process to know. And from the perspective from Christopher Anderson at Anderson Dodson, New Leaf, that is very human. And the idea here is that we're going to try to help you find a way, if you can do it amicably, to unmarry in a less stressful, more equitable, fairer way, even just through this one episode.
Yeah. And it all starts with having those frank conversations, right? You have to know and be willing to understand the financial situation and the rest of the situation in order to unmarry, to have it be amicable. You can't avoid it, right? If you're hiding your head in the sand is one way to make sure that you can't resolve it amicably.
I would like to start with something a little lighter before we get heavy with this. Sure. And I am going to take a subject that we talked about off the air about titles. So if talking with an attorney seems a little daunting to you, or you think that this show might not be for you, let me just introduce you to Christopher Anderson. And so you and I talked about why people call attorneys Attorney Anderson. And you said to me, it's not actually a formal honorific.
Things I've heard that one quite frequently. You know, when I was a prosecutor, people would call us ADA Anderson or Assistant DA Anderson or whatever. But there is no official honorific for an attorney. Like, and most attorneys in most states in the United States are actually their degree is a Juris Doctor. And nobody calls us doctor. So the honorifics, I think, just come from a place where when people deal with professionals, they're used to that, right? We do call our physicians doctor. Mm-hmm. And to a large degree, a lawyer is handling, at a similar professional level, the intricacies of your life in a very meaningful way. And people want, I think it's more for the people who use the honorific than for the person being having it added to their name, right? It's just this like need to believe or to desire to believe that this person has some super special knowledge. We call our, we call our spiritual advisors by honorifics, father or rabbi or whatever, depending on what sect it is. There's so many different ones, reverend, whatever it is. But so we do this with people to whom we're entrusting discretionary, professional, meaningful decisions to be made for us or with us. And I think that's where it kind of arises.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, people call me doctor, right? I don't ask for that. It's happened to me because of the PhD. But the funny part about that is I'm constantly having to say, I can't cure your rash. Don't tell me your medical problems. But I feel like there should be a distinction between maybe scholars and physicians or something like that, so that we separate PhDs like myself who have no medical training from MDs or other designations that are doctors. But there are lots of names that we give to attorneys that may or may not be right. Like I can think of counselor and esquire that probably you get called in court, right?
Actually, the only, I don't want to like insult people out there, but the only people I've ever seen using Esquire are people who are like needing to like needing that for some reason. Counselor, I love, by the way. I think counselor is the and usually like you won't hear counselor generally except from other lawyers or the judges. But and I think it's a great place to start the show because I think as a profession, and it's been from people who deal with us, particularly in family law, we forget about that part of it. We call those attorneys at law, or Christopher Anderson, attorney at law, and like you said, Attorney Anderson. But it's the counselor at law that is so important as a role in family law and so often forgotten that you're dealing with a human being, and that most of the advice, most of the counsel you will give clients in this role isn't legal.
That's right.
People come to family lawyers, all lawyers, honestly, but family lawyers in particular, with personal problems, not legal problems. The final resolution is often done in the law, and the solutions need to be done with knowledge of the law. Because you don't want to advise a client to do something that's not going to hold up in court, that's going to be, that the courts are going to reject. It's going to be a waste of everybody's time. But other than that, like a lot of it's just personal.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think counselor is a very a perfect word for this, because a lot of times you are, I mean, let's just face it, when people come to us, you and I both deal with people in transition and with lots of emotional situations. Money can be the most emotional part of it in some cases, right? And that sort of counseling, that level of experience of helping them sort out what essentially can be a hot mess, right? To just sort it out and listen to people and say, what is it that's important to you? What are you trying to accomplish? How can I help you do that? That's
Boom.
not,
That, yeah, that's it. And in fact, one of the things that I established as a driving factor of New Leaf Family, all my everybody that works here knows exactly that we will not begin an engagement with a client until we are certain, and more importantly, the client is clear as to what they're trying to accomplish. Like the words that you just used are the words. If we don't know what you're trying to accomplish, people come to us, like you said, a hot mess. Like I've just my spouse has just left me. My spouse has just sued for divorce. Or I just found out something that makes me want to sue for divorce. And da 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 da. And they're usually either dealing with something in the past that they're running away from, they want to get away from, or some conflict right now in the present, but haven't financially, emotionally, child raisingly, all the things haven't really given much thought to. All right, what does this look like 2 years from now? What do I want it to look like 2 years from now? And using that as their guiding force, what we call their Polaris, in driving the entire engagement.
Yeah, I can't agree with you enough on this. But I wonder, in our world, people are often intimidated about talking about their money in general. When you add something like a marital problem to that, it compounds everything. They end up in front of an attorney because they have to. As you said, somebody files for divorce, the other person says, "Boy, I'd better get an attorney," and there you are, right? But why do you think people are so intimidated by lawyers in the first place? It's why I started off with the why do we call them attorneys, right?
Yeah.
Why are they so intimidated by attorneys in the first place, do you think?
The same reason they're intimidated by accountants or financial advisors or other professionals, doctors, because they're entering into a field of knowledge that they don't have. So they're entering into the unknown. And I mean, it is the one of the core essences of our beings. Is we got this nice, beautiful brain, but all the way in the middle in there is the little lizard brain with the amygdala that teaches us and reminds us all the time that unknown equals danger,
That's
unknown
right.
equals scary, unknown equals bad. And so, we start there, right? And then attorneys exacerbate the problem by using big words and speaking in ways that make them sound important and make the client feel smaller. And the problem just circles and circles and circles, which is why we always start the conversation with what do you want? Because everybody can talk about that, right? But we've got no special knowledge to help you decide what you want. The most special knowledge I've got on that is to just say why a few times. Just getting down to that and hearing it that, and then it all becomes less scary. But I think it's a problem of perception, like you said, from the client's perspective, because it's probably the first time, hopefully, that they've hired a family lawyer, and the first time going through a court system that is not easily understood, and their first time, dealing with these kinds of problems. And so you start from a scary spot, and but we all can talk about what we want and where we want our lives to be.
It's funny that you mentioned the way our brain keeps us alive because it's a story I've told on the air before, but you remind me of it that when people really need, say, financial wellness, or they really need, a counselor to help them unmarry or get divorced, it is very scary because your brain has been telling you, don't change. What you're doing has kept you alive so far, don't change. And so when people find it very difficult to change or very difficult to step over a line, I remind them of that and say, this is what your brain is telling you. Don't leave the cave. The cave is safe, right? But you're
That's
going to
exactly right.
starve to death in the cave eventually. You need to learn how to live outside the cave. And so people will do that. And I think both of our professions, and it's one of my pet peeves, Jay will tell you, it's one of my pet peeves that financial advisors and attorneys both love to talk to you in jargon, in lingo, make themselves sound very knowledgeable. And to me, that means they're pretty insecure in their knowledge and insecure in their own skin. If they have to dazzle you with jargon rather than explain things to you in a way that you can understand and ask questions and feel comfortable about your own future in either case, then I think you look for another advisor or another counselor of some sort. And I don't like that sometimes attorneys and other professions hide behind the language, even in something like divorce where people especially need clarity. So I just wanted to say I love the name of the firm, New Leaf, because it says something. It doesn't say, you win divorce court.
Right.
It says, New Leaf, family. I mean, I don't know who came up with the name, but you did, really? I didn't know
Yay.
that. I didn't know that, but I love it. I love
My
to name
wife and I did
things.
together, but yes.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do to name things. And I don't think you could have done that any better. Three simple words that actually mean something. Bravo. Yeah.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And it does. It means a lot to us, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason why but it goes back to that same question, right? And like, I hate to keep harping on it, but like, it always starts there. It's like, where do you want to be, right? you're turning over a new leaf, whatever, you're here because something's not working. Now, do some of our clients reconcile? Sure. And we're thrilled. We're thrilled when they do because that's the future they want,
Right.
not because of what we were just talking about, because they're going back to a place of known and perceived safety that is not what, it's just perceived safety. It's not actually safe. And by safe, I don't mean like they may be in danger. Sometimes they are, right? Sometimes they're in an abusive situation and
Sometimes.
they will go back to it. But
Right.
sometimes it's just they're not being fulfilled. They're in a situation where they are staying in a relationship because of the perceived safety rather than their full potential. And that's what New Leaf is all about. It's really just being able to enter into that full potential. The idea of not just turning over the new leaf as a book, but growing as a new leaf, as a new plant, that can reach where it's trying to go, where it needs to go to really be its full bloom.
All right, we're at a point. Let's take a break if we can. Francis, I'm sure people have questions. First of all, let's get your phone number for them.
Of course, they can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or as always, just go to hugyourmoney.com. And we'll be back with more of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and a very interesting guest today. Christopher, this is great.
Well, thank you. It's so far been in a very, I think an important conversation, enjoyable, but an important conversation.
You know what you had said in the other segment was that you want to obviously have a client know what they want. It's so funny. In one particular book that I narrated, and I can't remember which one was the conflicting thing, but the author said many times people either don't know what they want or, yeah, for you to help somebody, obviously they've got to tell you what they want to have, what they want accomplished.
It's Jay, it's remarkable that, again, like what I was talking about earlier is that, the clients come to us, potential clients come to us running away from something or embroiled in conflict. And in their ears already, almost always, are friends, family, work colleagues, et cetera, all with their own, mission, with their own, perceptions, with their own, desires and hopes and fears that they're all plugging into our potential client's brain. And, without ever, by the way, being honest about what's driving the advice that they're giving, because they've all got their own issues going on. But nobody is asking the question. And so like when I say like we call it at New Leaf Family, we call this the Polaris process. Like it's something we must do before we will really get into an engagement. And because the client has it's not like the client doesn't know. It's that they haven't had time or space to think about what that future is. So and it's like I said, it's not magic and it's not big fluffy words. But it's asking clients things like, so this, a year from when we're finished, so 2 years from now, where are you living if everything works the way you want it? And not just like what town, but tell me about your house. What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it feel emotionally like to live there? Who lives there with you? Where do your children live? Where do they go to school? What's your children's relationship like with your now former spouse? What's your children's relationship like with you? What's the children's relationship like with your parents, with his, blah, blah, blah. Like these are the questions. Where do you go to vacation? Where do the kids go to school? How do they get there? Like just the mundanity of life, because that's what they haven't thought about. And what's really cool, And, you know, this is kind of like bringing coaching into the legal practice. What's really cool about it is when you have that conversation and you help them to paint a picture of this future house, paint a picture of the relationship with the kids, paint a picture of where they go to school, where you're going on vacation, it creates a reality that they can now really work towards. And a reality that now when they say, I want you to file this and I want to do this discovery and I want to do this stuff and that stuff. And you can then point to that future that they painted and say, do you understand that that might damage this picture? We might have to repaint this picture because of the decisions that you're making or want to make. And so let's talk about it in the context of that future. What a different conversation than, no, that's not a good idea. Why? Because I'm the lawyer and I know.
Right.
Right. Very, very different conversation.
You know, that's fascinating. I was grinning away while you were saying that because, of course, that's what we do here in terms of saying to people, and I was going to bring this up when we came back from break. They often just haven't identified what they want. They haven't given it a name. Yeah. So when I start saying, well, what's important to you? What do you want? They want to tell me numbers. Well, I want to be wealthy. I want to retire in 2 years. I want to do that's the outcome you want. What does it look like? What does it feel like? How are we going to get there? What are you willing to do to get there? What aren't you willing to do to get there? You know, are your goals realistic? And if not, can we redefine them? Do you have a cat or not who is going to bother you in the middle of a show? Would you excuse me? Well, Lola, are you just going to join us?
Lola.
If she will stay off camera, we can just continue, I guess. But do you see her little ears popping up?
I did see an ear, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Do
she's
you have
a Bengal,
a cat named Lola? Yeah, she's a Bengal. That's the point is, you know, people will say, well, they'll fight over their pets.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind the kids, a lot over the pets, right? They'll argue over anything. And the idea of having a firm work with you that does not perpetuate the argument because of legal fees, that instead is interested in resolving this in a way that is amicable and as fair as possible, given the participation of both people in the mix there, I think is incredibly valuable. I mean, in this conversation, it's really about doing something that's very, very difficult in a probably becoming more popular, but in a bit of an unusual way. When you think of divorce, you think of war. You don't think of, well, let's sit down and see what my future is going to look like.
Right, right.
But
and
that's the important
either
point.
Side. Yeah. Like, exactly right. And even like there's even some movements out there. One's called the collaborative law movement. And there are others to try to do things more amicably. But to a large extent, they all suffer from the exact same problem, the lack of this envisioning of the future of each party for themselves.
Yes.
So that they can then know what they're working towards. Because otherwise, if you don't think about the future, it's going to turn into a zero-sum game about fighting over the past.
Yes.
That's what the fight over the pets are. That's what the fights over the kids are. It's this reality that's gone, but that we're still holding on to and trying to carve up, as opposed to this future reality that is an abundance and doesn't need carved up because each person can have their own entire future that doesn't need to take anything away from anybody else. And then when you can come at it from that perspective, it becomes easier.
Christopher, I was going to ask, as you're in that setup to try to ask these questions of a client, does it many times confound the client?
Absolutely.
Slow the process up because they go, I don't know.
Absolutely. And that's the point. Right. And like that, if they could like kind of like what Francis was saying, if they come in and go like, I would like to have a $500,000 house in Buena del Vista, Florida, whatever. Like that's not real. Right. It may be rehearsed or somebody else's idea of it, or once in a while they have done the work and they really have thought about it, but then you can tell because they look beyond you and they're seeing it. Then, you know, but yes, it does confound them because nobody's asked them, and it confounds them when we do, because it's not that's not the conversation they're expecting from their lawyer. And so, which is good. It's a little bit of a pattern interrupt, which we need, in order to begin to have the meaningful conversations rather than, you know, and then, he took my mom's gray rug that, you know, like, or whatever. I tell a story. I did a hearing once when I was a pretty young attorney, but I'd already started having these thoughts about how, what it should be. And I was doing a hearing. I was doing a divorce, and we resolved many things. But what we didn't resolve was that the wife had the George Foreman grill that husband's grandma had given the couple for their wedding.
Oh my gosh.
And they couldn't resolve it.
Yep.
And they wouldn't agree about it. And they were going to go to a hearing about it. We're in the courtroom.
Oh my goodness.
And I take out my checkbook and I say, how much is a George Foreman grill?
Yeah.
I will write a check to the person who gives up the George Foreman grill out of my own money. I will not bill either of you for this, for the George Foreman grill, to avoid me appearing in front of a judge to talk about a George Foreman grill.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it.
They wouldn't do it, I bet. Exactly.
Wouldn't do it. We had the hearing.
Yep. And did the judge scold them and send them out into the hall, or what happened in the end? Do you remember?
The judge just heard it, awarded the George Foreman grill, and then pulled me aside because
don't ever come in here again.
The court, no. The court officer told him about the check and everything. Like,
good.
The judge knew what had gone on. And it was just like, and he just was like, you can lead him to water. The judge got it, but you know, the judge could have sent them out in the hall, probably should have sent them out in the hall, and to resolve it. But you talked about pets. Like, people, you know, will get over, and it's not about their love for the animal. It never is.
Yeah.
It's about their wanting to either take it away from the other person.
Yeah.
Or about holding on to, again, carving up the past.
It's absolutely true. And I'll just to make a comment about what we were speaking to a minute ago, I think many or even most people have not asked themselves what they want when they get through this. They're in a tailspin, you know, either they're the one filing or the one, you know, receiving that filing, and their life is changing drastically. And it may involve kids and it may involve pets and it may involve property, but it always involves money and people. You're trying to take one household, usually, that two incomes are supporting, and you're trying to split it into two households, and nobody wants to make any compromises. And you have the same income. I'm sorry, folks, something's got to give somewhere. And so I do want to get into what's the difference between equal and equitable. But first, I just want to ask you, I think what you're saying is the same thing I find, which is when people are arguing about the money in the divorce, and I don't think there's any way to separate that. Almost everybody argues about the money, and it's a majorly emotional problem more than the math. They're using it as a stand-in for something else: fairness, validation, control. It isn't about the pet. It isn't about the George Foreman grill, and it isn't about the money, even though we all think that it is. Do you agree with that?
100%. 100%. It's either holding on to the past or being embroiled in the current conflict, and a failure to have that that thought experiment about the future. Because if you can just get away from it for a second, you can just say, hey, just take a break, take a sec, look around you. There are people who are not married who live in their own house.
That's right.
With their kids.
Yep.
And they're not on the street. Like, never. There are people who never got married and they're doing it. It's not like what you just said, Francis, is totally true. Like, two can live cheaper than one. Then two people separately, for sure. It is a different lifestyle. And there are things that are different. And there's also the opportunity to enhance what you bring in. And like, people, again, right, if you haven't thought about the future, all these things are unknowns. And what are unknowns? Unknowns are
scary.
Scary. And so, yeah, it's clinging to a past and also dealing with So they're it's clinging to a past and dealing with perceived slights and looking for some, you said, equity, fairness, justice, in all of it. As opposed to, you know, sitting down and saying, you know what, that life is over. It's over. I may still be in the house, but I'm a tenant now.
Yeah.
I'm a private pilot. And one of the things they teach early on when I was learning is if something happens while you're in the air and, you know, your plane is now disabled in some way, you're flying the insurance company's airplane, right? Your job now is to get you and these passengers down alive. And you're not worried about, like, this beautiful airplane that you own is gone. It is gone. Like, just that's no longer a thing. Now you're dealing with your future and these people's future. And that's how you have to think about the divorce, too. It's like that old life is over. You may still be in the illusion of it.
Yeah.
But it's over. So it's time to start getting you landed in a place where you're safe and able to continue.
And we're sure we have some questions. Frances, can we first get your phone number?
Absolutely. It's 413-773-3333.
And are we going to fill folks in, too, about how to connect with Christopher at New Leaf?
Newleaf.family. Like no.com or anything else, just www.newleaf.family. And we're going to do /moneydoctor. So if you want to find particular things that are pertinent to this conversation, you just go to www.newleaf.family/moneydoctor and you can contact us there.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money.
Gentle hug could help today. A steady hand to guide the way. Not just numbers in a race. It's hope alive in every space. Hug your money, it's where you belong. Shines in the smallest dream. Mission granted, chase your dream.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the Money Doctor, Francis Ram, and our guest, Christopher Anderson from New Leaf Family. You know, I wanted to throw a quick question out here because this is something that I've learned in sales and in doing other things too. Everybody, and especially when they come to you, Christopher, everybody does things out of emotion. They're not going to necessarily look at things, you know, objectively in the cold, cruel light of day.
I think you're absolutely right. From a financial perspective, if you think that you make bad decisions when you're, I don't know, when you're slightly emotional, like you make a quick decision at the checkout counter because there was an end cap that had candy on it, if you think that's a bad financial decision, try making it when you're hurt or you're angry.
Yeah.
And see how your financial decisions are. And that's where a really good attorney can be worth their weight in gold, if you'll pardon that pun. Because it's so emotional. But go ahead, Christopher, tell us what you have to say about that.
Well, I would actually caution that some very good attorneys, and by good attorneys in this context, I mean skilled, will oftentimes, unfortunately, actually drive up the emotion in the case. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think, you know, your listeners need to focus on their own emotional state and maybe, you know, spend more time getting that really clear vision of the future and lead their attorneys towards that future. Right. And that's why we have that conversation. Because I don't listen. I'm a trial lawyer. You mentioned at the beginning of the show, like I was a criminal prosecutor. Mm-hmm. I like the courtroom. I like to win. And the people I hire tend to as well. But that's why we do this training, why we train ourselves, when we're dealing with family law, which is what we do, we got to think differently. There's no winning, right? There's a family that doesn't exist anymore. The win comes when we're done. The win comes from our clients moving forward into this new life. The wins do come from protecting them from unfairness and protecting them from overreach from the other side. But the biggest wins come from the clarity of purpose that comes from these future thoughts. I often advise our clients not to make any financial decisions while we're being, you know, living through the throes of the emotion, just like, you know, the time will come for that.
Yeah.
And if you are going to need to make a decision, let's talk about that future again and then ask, okay, if you make this decision, does that help propel you towards that future, or does it hold you back, or does it send you sideways? Usually it sends you sideways.
Yeah, we call that a period of transition. Mm-hmm. And it happens in financial planning all over the place, but I will slow people right down. If they've just inherited money, if they've gotten a divorce, if they've lost a partner, anything that adds and takes you out of your normal concept of what your life is like and upsets the apple cart, you're changing jobs, anything like that, moving to a new city. Those are all periods of transition where you don't really have the data you need yet to Right. make the decision well. You haven't lived in that environment yet. Something is different for you. And so in divorce cases, we work as part of a collaborative team with some attorneys, and that's what we do, is we start the process that you folks are doing legally that most places don't. We start the process with, what's this going to look like? How are we going to get the two of you through this? Because you're not going to win, either one of you. All you're going to do is pay lawyers all right. this money. So you better minimize that and figure out what you want. And so we do a lot of that work to not only figure out what they want, but to figure out what the real numbers are. Which brings me to the point that even though we've been talking a lot about the emotional side of it, very important to people, I want to point out that you're in Colorado. And Colorado has something, if I'm correct about this, called the sworn financial statement.
Mm-hmm.
And every state has something very similar. We have something similar in Massachusetts. And it's designed for people to fill out the form about what their expenses are and somehow inform the court about what will be
equitable, but it tends to lean more towards equal. Is this assessment correct? And what can you tell me about this financial statement?
Yeah. The sworn financial statement, first of all, let's just answer what it is. And like most states have a version of it. Some don't, amazingly. Is basically, think of it like a tax return in a way, right? You're advising the court, the decision maker, if you don't make the decision, which you should, of your financial circumstances through this form. You're also advising your spouse. Mm-hmm. So the idea behind it is that if everybody knows everything, it'll be easier to come to agreement. Because if anybody thinks you're hiding stuff, it's harder to come to an agreement. And so it serves both the purpose of informing the court, but also of informing the other side. And it can be, it can be a very stressful thing for people to figure out, to fill out. Some people don't have experience. We get a lot of clients who would say, like, my spouse dealt with the money. I have no idea. Like, right. I don't know what credit cards we have. I don't know what debts we have. I don't know what assets we have. I have no idea.
Yep.
And you have to start from there.
Yep.
But the purpose of it then in informing everybody is so that you can then come to an equitable distribution of that, of the assets and debts that are listed in this sworn financial statement.
I think that's the intent behind the form, but I can only speak to what I see in Massachusetts, which is that the form is oversimplified. Estimate your groceries, estimate your rent. I mean,
right.
People just make it up as they go along.
Absolutely.
And what I see is if we start with the clients here and we get the real expenses down about where they are now, we can parse out which expenses are going to belong to which partner. We can get a very clear picture, a very realistic, real life picture, and start to plan for the future based on that. When we're involved in helping them, guiding them with these numbers so that they can fill out the forms properly, then people really do know about everything and fairer decisions seem to be made. What I see, however, in the beginning, when people come to me and they've already submitted these forms, is that the one who completed it the best, the one who knew what they were doing the most, or the one who could make the numbers work to be the most believable, wins, if there is a win, right? That they've put down numbers that make it look like they can't afford to pay the other person anything, or that they should get a lot from the other person, and it may not be the case. So, we both work with people who are going through these transitions. It's never a clean process, but it can be made better. We talked a little bit about why this form might be so critical, but I think, at least in our state, in the Commonwealth here, it seems to fall short. And I remember in our pre-show chat, you made a comment to me. You said, there's an old joke, I think, it was a fascinating comment about, we went into law because we weren't good at math.
Yes.
Yeah. And I laughed about that. I thought that was pretty hysterical. But also, you were talking about something called math for law. Can you peel back the curtain a little bit and tell us what you're talking about there? What do lawyers really rely on in addition to this form, if anything? And what's it like to be a lawyer looking at the financial planning side of things?
Yeah, and it's challenging, right? Because I think a lot of lawyers will joke about that. We'll say, I went into the law, so I didn't have to do math. Not true for me, unfortunately. I came the math way, but for most lawyers, that's the case. And so there are softwares out there. You mentioned one of them, Math for Law. In every state, Math for Law supports many states.
Yes.
But there are a multitude of these softwares. Another one's called Family Law Software. Yeah. So those are the big two for Colorado, but different states have different ones. Some states actually publish their own calculators that you can just use the state one.
Yeah.
But regardless, what these are online calculators that let you put in the information based on a questionnaire, and then it organizes the information for you in a way that the court wants it, that fortunately, you know, because the lawyers on the other side, we all know what it's supposed to look like. So it organizes it in a way we're used to digesting it. And then we'll do certain calculations. So for instance, if both sides put their information into Math for Law, Math for Law will then calculate what the child support's supposed to be. Math for Law will then calculate what the spousal support maintenance, or what people call alimony, is supposed to be. What it won't do really is actually the equitable distribution. And for that, I've built one, for instance, for my own firm that does the equitable distribution portion of it. But there's more subjectivity in the equitable distribution than most people think about. So, you know, it's meant to be equal. It is meant to be equitable. And equity sometimes requires that it be unequal. And we have to include those things. Whereas, you know, the child support calculation is a little bit more strict because it's the right of the child to be supported. It's not, you know, and the courts are really just looking at what are the resources of the parents to support this child or children. But yeah, so that's what that software is about. So,
great time again. I hate to do it to us.
Okay.
It flies when you're having fun. And I'm sure that there are questions. Francis, can we get your phone number again for folks?
Yes, 413-773-3333.
And of course, it's hugyourmoney.com. And for today, as we're talking to Christopher here, you can get more details too about topics we're talking about at Christopher's website, which is newleaf.family/moneydoctor, and doctor is spelled out DOCTOR. And we'll be back with more of Financial Fitness with Dr. Francis Ram.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and our guest is Christopher Anderson, attorney, counselor. You know what's nice is that you've got somebody, Francis, obviously, you can tell by talking to Chris. He's got empathy. He's kind. But at the same time, if you have him on your team, it's like having Mr. Spock or Data from Star Trek who's the guy from Big Bang Theory? Probably could explain, quantum string theory to you or whatever it's called.
Oh, we could go there if you want to, but it doesn't usually help in family law cases.
No, but it's very nice to be able to see things from the whole perspective, As we say, this is emotional, but you've got to look at things in the cold, cruel light of day when you're dealing with these issues, yes?
Yeah, and cold, cruel light reminds me. So we've been all warm and fuzzy talking about how we're going to help people and help them through their emotions and help them through their money. I have two words for you: child support. this form, I'm just going to go on a bit of a rant here, a tiny little rant. This lovely financial form that we all spend a lot of time preparing for the courts and which goes to the courts. In our state, the child support is a factor of your income. And what I find to be unfair, maybe not equitable, is that that calculation doesn't necessarily take into account the amount of debt payments they have, other expenses. It's their income. Now, if you have no debt versus having debt, your income is doing a different job. So what can you tell us about child support and what can possibly make that fairer? Because what I see often, all too often, is now there's been a division, one partner, it doesn't matter whether it's the wife or the husband, but one partner is living in the house, getting an income from alimony or child support, doing kind of okay. And the other person is, maybe not living in their car, but definitely not able to move forward financially because the child support is so high. I'm all for supporting children, but sometimes they will come to me and they'll say, in 6 years, I'm going to be able to buy a house again.
Right.
What can you say about the child support part? It's so difficult here.
It is. First of all, it just is. And it goes back to kind of what you were talking about earlier, which is that you create two households where there was one and it's harder. It's more expensive. And then, you know, we've been talking about equitable distribution of assets and debts. But now we're also going to be talking about, like, when you think about child support, you also have to think about the fact that you're now having shared parenting time much of the time. So you've got two sets of bedrooms, two sets of clothes, two sets of Count Chocula, you know, two sets of everything, two parents driving kids to plays and swim practice, and you know, the list goes on, two sets of childcare sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so all these additional expenses, and yeah, you get one parent, often both parents who say, I just can't make it this way. Like, I can't. And indeed, like you said, you know, if one person's receiving the support and living in the house, like it may fall harder on one parent, or feel like it falls harder on one parent than the other.
What I hear people complain about who are paying child support and who have joint custody, I think is a valid complaint. The kids are here half the time. I spend half the food, I spend all of this, and I still pay child support. And in an amicable situation, you can work that out. But what the court decides is maybe another story.
Right. And let's talk about the concept first, like, because I think people do get themselves wrapped up and tied up into knots over exactly the words you just used. But let's talk about the concept and also where it can go wrong and where it does go wrong. So the concept is this: spouse one has income one, and spouse two has income two. From the court's perspective, you mash the two incomes together and you get a total income. And then the court says if there's two children, those two children deserve to be supported to a certain dollar amount based on this total income. I don't care where the income comes from. Now, I'm going to go back and say, okay, well, 60% was spouse one, 40% was spouse two. So spouse one is responsible for 60% of that total amount that goes to the kids. So we need to move 10% over to spouse two. And so that now you both have the resources to do your share. That's the concept, right? It's that the kids are being supported from the combined income. And it comes from an illusion. And we could talk about policy later, but the illusion is that the children should not suffer any diminution of their support because there's been a divorce.
Right.
They should be supported in exactly the same way as had the parents stayed together. But we just got done discussing the fact that there's all these additional expenses. And so that kind of makes it feel unfair. But it's unfair equally or equitably in a way, right? Because both parties have additional expenses. And you know, when one party's handing over a check to the other party, you know, they know that it's not covering all of it. The party who's receiving is also supposed to be applying some of their own resources to the children as well. And it's just supposed to equal it out. How does it end up working out? Sometimes it feels like a burden. But this is where I just have to remind people that it's what they're really feeling is the fact that it's more expensive to live this way. And it's more expensive to be a single parent and have, like, because each of you now has almost 100% of the expenses of that you used to share. You know, because like we just said, you know, the Count Chocula and everything else, like you each are supporting all of this. And it's really hurting both sides. And most people that are making the complaint are feeling it themselves and not really understanding that it's actually hurting both sides. And so what we try to work with on our clients, and I'm sure you do too, is to remind them that this is not a universe of lack. This is not a zero-sum game. And if you're going to live this way, then we're going to have to perhaps have some conversations about what you're bringing in and what's going out. But then you also raise something that's, I think, super, super important, which is not only do you have to look at those two things, but when the child support calculation says X, and you said, you know, sometimes one person's got all this debt or like all these other burdens, and it doesn't really take that into effect. That's where good lawyering really becomes important. You've got to be able to tell that story to the court during the process. Oh, we get so many clients that come to us afterwards.
I
say, oh, the court didn't understand. The court, like, I can't, like, I, we have clients that come to us all the time. I can't pay this.
Yeah.
I just can't pay this.
That's
I
right.
can't believe they did this to me. And the problem is that the court didn't know because nobody told the judges aren't omniscient. The judges can't see behind the paper unless someone tells them the story. And that's where, you know, the really, you know, solid lawyering that can tell a story, that can tell the story of the children, tell the story of the parents, tell the story of the future, and say, judge, this is what's going to happen here. Like, you know, what we're setting up, we're walking these people into failure for themselves and for these children. Let's not do that. Let's write a different story. That has to happen right in the moment or it's lost.
Yeah, again, we're totally on the same page about this. That's why the work up front financially helps, right? Mm-hmm. To build a budget, to look at all the debt, to have the retirement assets, to have everything in one place where we can organize it and say, here's the whole picture, here's the holistic picture, and how are we going to fund your future? And then work with an attorney on this, right? I would call this death by a thousand cuts in some ways for people. They tend to default to equal rather than equitable or fair because the math is easy. And then what happens is people start to chip away at it without a good attorney in the mix who will hold up and say, wait, 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 you might be being unfair to yourself.
Right.
They tend to say, oh, I'll take the Visa card. It's okay. I'll just give me the Visa card. Just shut up, go away. Give me the Visa card. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll take the car payment. No, yeah, you can stay in the house because I feel really bad about whatever. So I'm going to give you the house. And they make these little decisions that turn out to be a major problem in their finances when you're not talking to each other and amicably and both of you looking at the whole picture. And then what happens is they bring this information to the court. The decision is made. Everybody agrees. It's done. Try and unravel that later. Yes, you can go back into court and complain that your child support is unfair. It's very hard to do, I think. So I just really think that that is terribly important get everybody on the same page financially, even though you're already emotionally a wreck and you don't want to do it. That's what skillful people are there to help you do, to
absolutely
offload that and just provide answers, but offload it to a professional. We have a few minutes left, and I wonder if you might share with us maybe an example of a story where you've seen a computer spit out a number that was clearly wrong for one of the parties.
I mean, it happens all the time because because of the thing that you mentioned earlier. So I'm not going to think of a specific story because I'm just going to amalgamating all the stories. The child support calculator looks at relative incomes. It doesn't look at resources. You know, you talked about debts, and that's one thing. And we'll think about that as well, because all a debt is really at the end of the day is a negative resource.
Right.
Right. And it doesn't look at resources. Like parent A might have, their parents are going to provide them a house.
They have a family safety net.
Yeah. Or they have a pre-existing, because, you know, this doesn't go into the equitable distribution, a pre-existing trust fund or something that came before the marriage.
Right.
And they're going to be able to rely on this and live a certain way and also get paid child support because that's what the computer spit out. Because the computer only looked at income. And that's what the court will go with, because the court is seeing this case and then the next case and then the next case and then the next case. They don't have the time to look underneath. That's the lawyer's job. And if you think, you know, and I'm talking to the listeners now, if you think that you who have not done this for a living are going to go in there and tell the story and be heard, I wish it were so, but it's not. To be heard, you've got to present in a way that's concise, that is in a format and in a way that the court can hear it quickly and understand and stop the presses for a second and go like, oh, we're about to make a big mistake and we're going to really set these people up for a big, big problem. That's where the lawyering comes in, and it's so important because that's just one example, but the resources and or the debts. There are other examples, as well as, you know, how the numbers can tell the wrong story, and that story needs to be told. And I just do want to mention, because you said you can go in and modify. Yeah,
It's hard. Yeah.
It's hard. And you have to show that something changed.
Right.
And then oftentimes the modification will only go as far as the change. Mm-hmm. The fundamental unfairness that underpinned it is kind of locked in.
Yeah.
And, it's going to be, it's a much harder, is it impossible? No, but it's a much harder rock to move.
Yes. Yeah. When does it make sense for lawyers to introduce to the picture a financial professional, or when is it overkill? Is it ever overkill?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of things that are overkill. Mm-hmm. If people are of limited means, or there just aren't that many assets, or it's not that complicated, like that's just, yeah. You might just be adding an expense that they don't need to have. Mm-hmm. But to me, you bring in an expert, you bring in a financial professional, the same time you bring in a child psychologist, the same time you bring in any other experts into a case, which is when the story you're trying to tell involves matters of opinion, or matters that are beyond the ken, beyond the knowledge that you should expect the court to have. So somebody that needs to educate the court from a position of professional knowledge, of knowledge that's not common. That's when you bring them in. And that is, very often, like you've got someone who's got a retirement out there that they're going to be relying on, or has an annuity, or has money coming in from this source or that source, or like we said, has this trust fund. How do you value that? How should you talk about how that affects their current ability to support? You know what? As a lawyer, I can have an opinion, but the court really shouldn't listen to my opinion. That's when you need the financial professional to come in and give that opinion that the court can rely on and say, okay, this person's got $1 million in a trust fund. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that they're going to spend $1 million this year. What does that mean to their ability to support these children? Only a financial professional can give the actual answer to that. That's when you need to bring them in.
Boy, I thank you so much for spending all this time with us and talking about this. The real goal here is understanding, and understanding that divorce doesn't have to be war. It can be a process of realignment. And Christopher, I just want to thank you for helping us shed some light on that.
My absolute pleasure. Yes, it is a turning of a page.
Yep.
And walking into your hopefully your fullest possible future, and yes, having some professionals along the way to help you get there.
Thank
Francis,
you.
Can we get your phone number for folks real quick?
Absolutely. It's 413-773-3333.
And of course, the website is hugyourmoney.com. We appreciate Christopher Anderson's time too. More information related to this whole show is at newleaf.family, then /Money Doctor, with doctor spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R.
Yes.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Francis. It's been a great show.
And join us next time around for another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. Mission granted, chase your dream. Hug Your Money, where financial wellness gets personal. Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you.